This was an exercise I was just looking at years ago for, well, not many years ago, regarding the introduction to the whole Bible. Genesis chapter 1. Most of us read through it very quickly because there's only a few verses. In fact, there's only, in the section I want us to look at today, there's only 39 words. Few sentences. Not much to it, you would think. But in those 39 words, there are some profound considerations that we may tend to overlook when just simply reading. We're not going to just simply read this time. We're going to look rather carefully at what these profound 39 words tell us. Genesis 1, verse 1 and 2. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And God in this place is Strong's number 430, Elohim. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. These few insightful words reveal that before the 6 days of creation, what we call the 6 days of creation, there was a planet hanging out here in space already. The 6 days of creation do not deal with the original creation of the planet Earth. And knowing what this tells us about the planet Earth, we can understand that there was a pre-existing universe. The Earth couldn't be out there in space by itself without the rest of the universe already being present. So that reflects back to verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Now you'll notice in the 6 days of creation that come later, there's no reference to the creation of the actual planet or of its atmosphere or of the other heavenly bodies in the universe. Typically, people tend to, or in many religions, fundamentalist type religions, and our family years ago was of the same persuasion, that the 6 days of creation describe the beginning of the earth. We're going to see from these 39 words that there's a lot more to the picture than people at times understand. With the first two verses, we're drawn to the consideration that heaven and earth were created at some point in time long prior to the 6 days, that there was a heaven, which we could refer to as outer space, and the basic planet that was in existence before the 6 days, related later, begin to take place, what we accept as being some 6,000 years ago. Logic would require that we realize that this planet was not the only heavenly body, whether star or planet, to exist beforehand. It would also confirm the antiquity of stars. Further on in this realization that the referenced beginning was long prior to the onset of the 6 days, but if we were to hold to the idea of the earth being only 6,000 years old, would that include the rest of the universe as well? Is the entire universe only 6,000 years old? If we want to think that, we have a problem, because there are stars throwing light our way that are more than 6,000 light years away. If that were the case, their light wouldn't have reached us yet, and we couldn't yet see them. But the fact that we can see them tells us that no, the universe is older than these 6 days of creation. Verse 2, it says, "And the earth was without form." What can we see in that? Well, something is very obvious. There's an earth. To be without form, it had to be there. The earth was without form. This would explain that the planet as we know it today did not exhibit the same geological configuration as it has presently. That the 6 days created a new configuration as opposed to what its previous state had been. This time, one amenable to life, where the conditions previous had not been amenable. In other words, the earth that existed at this point in time could not support life as we know it. That's what's changing. Further on in verse 2, it says, it was void. Not only without form, but it was void. Are we by this being told that none of the recognizable geological features that we're familiar with existed at that particular point in time? Some people suggest that the Hebrew words used suggest a state of waste and destruction, indicating that there had been a prior order, a habitable creation with its own order, what in one place is called the first estate, that angelic beings failed to keep, that this prior order had been in a condition needing attendance. If there was a world attended to by angels that needed upkeep, which is what that suggests, then that tells us, yes, there was a prior world before what we read of in Genesis verse 1. It goes on to say, "And darkness was upon the face of the deep." That's pretty profound in itself. What did pre-exist at that time, being introduced here, was enveloped in darkness. And it had a surface with dimensional depth, this alluding to the fact that there had been light on the planet at some point in the past. How could you make the contrast? How could you know what darkness is if nothing else had ever existed? The earth, at that time, was enveloped in darkness. Light as we know it did not yet appear. And this isn't talking of light emitting from the sun or stars at this point. This is light itself emitting from any source. That spectrum of energy, which is a very narrow band, that we know of as visible light, apparently was not yet functional. God created light in order to remedy that condition. And verse 2 concludes with saying, "And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters." If we didn't already understand it from the previous phase, we learn from this that the planet was covered with water, with a solid material at some depth below the surface prior to its dramatic reformation by the power of God's Spirit. Did that include other fluids, such as what we would know as an atmosphere, with its water vapor content? Is that why waters is plural? Now, the presence of water tells us something, too. This is talking about water in its liquid state. And that would indicate that the planet existed in a temperate zone where water could exist in a liquid state. Where did that energy come from to create the warmth necessary for there to be water in liquid state? These verses don't tell us a great deal, but if we think about them, they do. There's a lot of information buried in just a few words. If the earth weren't in a temperate zone, similar to what it is in right now, all of the water would have either frozen or been boiled off. So these verses tell us a lot. Now from verse 2, continuing on, we get into what we know as the days of creation, the 6 days of creation. Verse 3, and God said, let there be light. And there was light. And God saw the light that it was good, and God divided the light from the darkness. And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And the evening and the morning were the first day. We have to picture that to understand all of what it's telling us. In order for there to be night and day, the earth had to be in a rotational state. There's no night and day on the moon. The moon's quote-unquote day is 30 earth days. The moon doesn't rotate like the sun does, or like the earth does around the sun. There's a difference. But the first day and the first night tell us that the earth itself, the pre-existing planet, was not only in a temperate zone, but it was rotational. Now, another thing about light. Out in outer space, there is no light. If you were in outer space, you couldn't tell light from darkness. Until the energy of light were to strike an object, then light can happen. Can we comprehend that? For there to be light, there has to be something for that light to fall upon in order for us to discern its presence. So right there, we have a lot of information. Number one, that the earth is pre-existing. Number two, that it's in a temperate zone. Number three, that it's in a rotational state. And number four, that light now is striking a surface that it didn't before. Verse 6, and God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters. And notice that word divide, we'll come back to that. Now the word firmament, we tend to think of something solid. No, the firmament's referring to the atmosphere. It's just another word for atmosphere. The earth had waters above and below the quote-unquote surface. If there was a surface, or the earth may have been like other planets where the atmosphere just gets denser and denser as you go down, but there's no definable line of delineation between gaseous forms and solid forms. In this case, humidity in the air and liquid water. Verse 7, and God made the firmament and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. Clouds and humidity in the atmosphere. And it was so. And God called the firmament heaven. That's the first heaven. And the evening and the morning were the second day. The picture in this next creative act acts upon pre-existing planetary elements. He didn't create water in any of these 6 days of creation. He didn't create the basic planet. The narrative doesn't anywhere describe a bringing into being of the base planet upon which these actions are being carried out. They're presented as already there. Down to verse 9, and God said, let the waters under the heaven be gathered together unto one place, and let the dry land appear. And it was so. So underneath the depths of these waters, there was hard, solid material already there. what would become land was already present. This development merely raised portions of that land base above the level of the liquid surface. It made for a separation of two pre-existing planetary features. Part of the solid Earth rose, part of it sank, creating dry land and creating oceans. Verse 10, and God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters called he seas. And God saw that it was good. So over and over and over, we're given the picture that there was a pre-existing planet here, functioning, or in motion at least, similarly placed and functioning in motion basically as it does today, but not having the same geological characteristics it has today. God was changing what had been previously a planet that could not support life as we know it. The 6 days of creation describe modifications to a planet that had long pre-existed. How long? We have no clue other than in verse 1. It was sometime back in what is called there the beginning. How far was that beginning from the 6 days of creation? We don't know, at least not from scriptural evidence. And let's understand, it wasn't God's purpose in Genesis 1 to give us a comprehensive, exact scientific description of how the earth came to be. That wasn't his point. And we'll come back to that thought, but just hold it for a moment. God was revealing something. He was telling us all we needed to know to this point. The 6 days of creation describe modifications to a planet that had long pre-existed. Clearly, the 6 days do not describe the original creation of the planet itself or of the universe, which is only alluded to in the first two verses of Genesis. Let's review some of what the first chapter of Genesis has revealed to us this far. Number one, planet Earth was already in place before day one, the planet itself. There was a definable surface. It already had water in liquid and gaseous form. It already had what we could probably consider a chaotic atmosphere, where God had to make order out of it to be the atmosphere that we see today. It already had solid rock and granular solids be somewhere below the surface of those waters. It was warm enough for the waters to be liquid. There was gravity already. And at some point in time, it had become formless and chaotic. It existed in a state that could not support life. The more we understand about God's plan and the more we understand about his word, we realize that God oftentimes veils a message in what he's telling us. We don't always see it. The idea of the parables that Christ spoke to listeners in his time illustrates that to some degree. We hear the words, we understand the words, it's in our language. But people don't always get what he's really alluding to. The days of creation are a series of divisions. There's a message in that as well. It says in verse 2 that the Spirit moved to divide. there was direct interaction between the Spirit of God and the physical planet. Six thousand years ago, this third planet was reformed to become a habitable environment for man. That's part of the message. We see in these days of creation a repetitive series of dividings. Notice it. We don't always see this. On the first day, the power of the all-powerful God was to excite energy in such a way so that it create wavelength spectrum that we know of as visible light. The very first thing, he divided light from darkness. The absence of light. That was the first division. In the process, he divided time. Time was added into infinity, creating a phenomenon we know as days. Ageless infinity was divided into segments by which we can measure time. The next act was to divide the waters into a distinct gaseous and liquid state. That kind of tells us it wasn't that way before. The Earth's fluid strata was divided horizontally during that interval designated as the second day. In Job 38, verses 4 to 9, God asked this, "Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? When I made a cloud its garment, and thick darkness its swaddling band?" That gives us a little glimpse into that period of time. We had two kinds of waters, enlightened and unenlightened, water that was clear and water that was not clear. We have to choose light. It creates a clear distinction between order and chaos, understanding and ignorance. The next thing he did was to divide the earth laterally. He prepared a place for habitation. That was when land masses began to appear. The next day, three heavenly phenomena were exposed. One which dominates the day, an energy source that enables and sustains life, and another that orbits with the earth that is also essential to sustain life. We couldn't have life on the earth without the moon and its gravitational actions upon the earth. And the third thing being the stars, which give us seasons and give us the ability to locate ourselves where we are. Let's look at that verse. I want to bring out something there. We're into the third day. Verse 14, "And God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from night, and let them be for signs, for seasons, and for days and years." Ancient peoples long ago learned to read the stars for signs. If you lived in a world like existed in the time of Adam, or a world that existed after the flood, it was a world that was all virgin territory. Whether you were out on the oceans or whether you were on land, you had no clue where you were. And if you ever wanted to find your way back home, you had to navigate. There were no maps, there were no roads, maybe rivers you could follow, but that's about it. But you have no clue where you were. The ancients learned a long time ago, from the beginning, how to read the stars. So they knew where they were and knew where they had to go to get back home. You can be sure that there was a lot of exploration in the early years of man's existence on earth. And there were some serious problems after the flood because everything changed. The earth's tilt changed. The continents were altered. They weren't like they were before. Mountains rose up that weren't there before. Other areas sank that weren't there before. What may have been land at one point was now underwater. There's even examples of that in recent times. So for anyone to know how to know where they were, they had to know how to read the stars. God gave the stars as a tool for that purpose. The next thing he did was divide living from the non-living. Grasses and plants and flowers and trees and everything living as it in the plant form was created. But then we come to the ultimate divisions within the array of living things. First, life in the firmament, which is birds and fish and so on. Then life on land. All of these first created functioned without conscious intellect. They lived with a pre-programmed mentality called animal instinct. They did what their species allowed them or compelled them to do without thought. So there was a division between that life form and the next, where God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness," and into which he injected a spirit that could be, that could accept his spirit. So we had another division between those that were intellectual and those that were not. Those that could receive God's Spirit and those which could not. And that carried forward into humanity, the greater mass of humanity, where the same thing is true. There is a segment of humanity that can receive God's Spirit and a segment that cannot. And John 6:44 explains that to us, at least in this present age, where no man can come unless the Spirit of God, the Father, draws him. There is a division, there is a distinction. It began at creation and is carried on through the entire plan of God. In creation, we can see a veiled picture of God's plan of redemption. Now, the ultimate division we can read of in Matthew 25:31-46, and that's the passage that describes the dividing of the sheep from the goats. The ultimate division. God has a plan for humanity, and that plan is going to ultimately result in dividing those that accept him, that follow his way, from those who don't. The creation narrative explains God's plan for ultimate creation, adding beings to his eternal family. Just as another example of God veiling his revelation of his plan of redemption to mankind, is contained in the names of the ancient patriarchs that are named in later chapters of the book of Genesis. Now, there were many others who lived during that period of time, and yet we have just a few series of names that were given to us. Adam, Seth, Enoch, Enosh, Canaan, Mahalalel, Jared, Enoch, Methuselah, Lamech, and Noah. Why aren't there others mentioned? There were many others that lived in those 1,500 or so years. God gave us the names of specific individuals. And the strange thing is, those names all have meanings. Adam means man. Sheth, appointed. Enosh, mortal. Canaan means sorrow. Mahalil, the blessed of Ale. Jared shall come down. Enoch, teaching. Methuselah, his death shall bring. Lamech, the despairing. And Noah means comfort. If you string those together into a message, here's what it says. Man appointed mortal sorrow. The blessed ill shall come down, teaching. His death shall bring the despairing comfort. Did we realize that that message was there? Hidden below our obvious radar as we read through some of these accounts. God has revealed his plan in many, many ways, even from ancient times. It's a matter of our discernment to understand them. But God has a plan. We know the finer details from other passages and from especially from the New Testament and Christ's own ministry. But he began to reveal his plan for mankind even from the beginning. 2 Peter 3, I skipped over this earlier. 2 Peter 3. Because I think Peter understood the essence here too. 2 Peter 3, verses 4 to 7. And saying, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of the creation. Goes right back to the beginning. For this they willingly are ignorant of, that by the word of God the heavens were of old. The heavens were ancient. And the earth standing out of the water and in the water. Referring right there back to the second day of creation. Whereby the world that then was, being overflowed with water, perished. But the heavens and the earth, which are now, by the same word, are kept in store, reserved unto the fire against the day of judgment and perdition of ungodly men. Peter's referring back to that period of time. Now let's conclude with Hebrews chapter 4. Hebrews 4, verses 1 through 6. Let us therefore fear, lest the promise being left us of entering into his rest, any of you should seem to come short of it. Entering into his rest is referring to that division, that distinction between those who are his and those who are not. That final and ultimate division. For unto us was the gospel preached as well as unto them, but the word preached did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in them that heard it. For we which have believed do enter into that rest. As he said, as I have spoken in my wrath, if they shall enter into my rest, although the works were finished from the foundation of the world. For he spoke in a certain place of the seventh day on this wise, and God did rest the seventh day from all his works. The final distinction in the 7 days of creation, I forgot to mention that earlier, the distinction between regular time and holy time. By resting on the seventh day, God created that distinction. He set apart holy time. For he spoke, verse 4 again, for he spoke in a certain place of the seventh day on this wise, and God did rest the seventh day from all his works. And in this place again, if they shall enter into my rest. Seeing therefore, it remains that some must enter therein, and they to whom it was first preached entered not in because of unbelief. God has revealed his plan, though in many cases veiled to those who don't believe. It's all through his word, even clear back to the first chapter of the Old Testament. When we read, we need to read carefully, because many times God has placed there information that he wants us to discern. It builds our faith to understand or to know God's plan even from the beginning. So hopefully these words were of interest. Maybe they'll spark further study. But let's keep in mind, God is also always mindful of his plan for humanity. The first being to create a planet suitable for those who are set to become part of his family if we allow him to do his creative work in us. He's continually dividing, right down to the dividing of the sheep from the goats. And we always need to remember that.